Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
And so the sacred mindfulness bell reminds us to stop and be fully present. This is the moment the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in it. Time it was, oh what a time it was, oh what a time it was. Sitting here at the Center for Spiritual Living, we consciously chose to be in this space, in this sacred space, to experience this life that we've been given. Life that was never born, this life that never dies. In the midst of that, there is that which does die. And we get to be present with this incredible journey to nowhere, to now here. And so the invitation, it's always an invitation, is to be here now. As my beloved teacher Ram Dass used to say, and as he evolved to the last phase of his beautiful life, having had a stroke, having had to learn to speak again, he changed that be here now to be love now. And as I saw him at the end of his life, he spoke about being a soul, an eternal soul, and how so few of us identify with that deep, intimate place of belonging to each other. And then I hear Emerson's The Oversoul, that we are all part of this oversoul that connects with itself through each other. And if you're riding in a kayak, you might see an owl looking down at you and smile. In my case, there's a little snake that has nestled in the front bush in the front yard. And I was out there yesterday and Trey screamed, "Oh my God, there's a snake here." And I said, "Oh, how sweet is that? A little snake has chosen to take up residence." And I came into the center this morning and I found that beautiful large cockroach waddling around. And I rested. We had this kind of intimacy. And then I fell on Friday and Adam came over and picked up the pug and took him into safe place so I could deal with my face. And I saw love in his arms, two tantric lovers, a one-eyed pug and my spiritual son holding each other in that sacred embrace. So in this sacred moment, the past and the future dissolve into the present moment. And we begin to see these sacred patterns on the energy. The pattern of falling down and getting up. The pattern of loving someone who might be suffering. And in that awareness, you feel this connection to the one that is strong, that reminds us that we are each other. As we sing at the end of the service, "I am you, you are me, we are one." And in this unity, we will live in harmony. And peace has come, because we know that we are one. There is no other. And so we take a deep integrating breath as we embrace the all of life and we open our eyes and we be here now. I was sharing, I had a dream. No, I didn't have a dream. I saw in the news, they had a tribute to the penguins in in Antarctica. And they showed how at this time of year, the babies are coming, and all the penguins were on top of this cliff. It was way up high, and it took only one crazy penguin to decide he's going to leap on his belly and slide down that cliff and go into the water. Well, you know how we lead by example? Then all the little baby penguins decided they were going to leap off the cliff, And I have a fear of heights. And I said, the penguin in me would not do that. And I turned the TV off and I said, that's too much trauma. And then I thought, why do I have this past life recall of falling off a cliff? I have had fear of heights since I was a little boy. And they just showed me part of my past, I guess. But then I started to laugh. Because life gives you these little messages along the way. My Zen calendar last week was Khalil Gibran. This thing has been working on me ever since I read it. It said, spare me a wisdom that cannot cry. I hope you hear that, Ashley. And spare me a philosophy that cannot laugh. And then lastly, it said, and spare me a greatness that cannot bow down to a little child. And I thought, okay, Khalil Gibran is yet reminding me that it's all sacred. The tears, laughter sets us free, and bowing down to a child is really bowing down to our original innocence. And then you hear Jesus, you must be like a child if you would enter the kingdom of heaven. What does that mean? That means we must find that original innocence, that part of us that isn't so opinionated, that has all the answers, the beginner's mind that is teachable. T is the biggest child I've ever met, and that's a compliment. She looks at me like I said something bad about her. No, because she knows how to play. And I remember her once, because she is an otter in her spirit animal. Otters have a PhD in play. And she told me once, as the otter would, she said, you cannot organize play. Play by its very nature has to be spontaneous. It has to be organic. And what one person looks like play is another person's punishment. And then you get to, could we play with this game called life and how we discover it anew? I believe that everything is grace at this stage of my life. Grace is the unmerited givingness of the universe to its creation. And so when you have a little accident, which is I had on Friday morning, and I fell on my face, I've seen the blessings creep up on me. My beloved Adam came over and took the pug and rescued me. Gigi came over and made sure the blood was cleaned up and told me I needed to get a shower. And then my little boy came up at me and said, I'm afraid I might fall in the shower, because I had obviously fallen on the floor, slipping on a rug. And he came up and he said, but you know, it's slippery in that tub and you don't have one of those things on the floor. And Trey's not home, and wouldn't that be a double whammy if I fell in the shower? And so I avoided the shower until Adam came over and he says, I'll be downstairs. You can go take the shower and you'll be all right. So he came downstairs. I went up. I showered. I survived the shower. I came down and I said, you know, we're supposed to work in the yard, but let's be adaptable. I said, do I look too horrible to go out to lunch? So we went out to lunch, and of course the waitress screamed when she saw me, but after that initial shock, everything was fine. And I tried to make the best of whatever this day was, but the gifts that it's given to me have been incredible. I've got this new class starting this Wednesday, and it's called The Joy of True Meditation by Jeff Foster. And initially I was going to teach Llewellyn's class on The Light of Awakening, which is about how we are all nothing, and in nothingness we become everything. And I thought, you know, this is too esoteric for the students. Let me give them some hardcore fall-on-your-face metaphysics. And wouldn't you know, that's what happened to me. Last week I shared with you Everything Belongs by Richard Rohr, one of my absolute favorite books I've ever taught. And I pulled him up this morning, and he gave me some medicine that I needed. He says, when you hit the bottom, you find the source. Then your dream collapses. He said, you do not resolve the God question in your head or even in the perceptions of moral response. It is resolved in you and your life experience. So the school of hard knocks is the school where we get to learn how to be human. He said, when you agree to bear the mystery of God, well, then you experience the grace of every moment. God's suffering for the world and God's ecstasy in the world are all together. So agreeing to this task to be human is much harder than we think, I'm afraid, than just trying to be a good person. We'll tell that to the Whitesburg Baptist Church. He goes on to say, most of us have to be taught how to see, and true seeing is the heart of spirituality today. To learn to see with compassionate eyes, with eyes that can see the suffering on the world and bring your compassion to the suffering. To learn to see with eyes that it's all part of you. That little snake was me. That little cockroach that I saved was me. If you can't say it's all one and then exclude those that you don't like. He goes on to say, how do we find what is supposedly already there? Which is this infinite universal love that Seamus is, and we all are. Why isn't it obvious, he asked this question, why should we need to awaken our deepest and most profound self? And how do we do it, he asked this question. Live in the question. Is it by praying and meditating? Remember, he's a Franciscan monk. Is it by praying and meditating? Is it by more silence and solitude? Well, I would say yes. And more sacraments? Well, of course. Yes, do all of those above. But, he says, the most important way is to live and fully accept your reality just as it is. That's why we're doing Jeff Foster. He says, I don't know if I'm gay, if I'm straight, if I'm this or I'm that. He literally fell apart. He was going to kill himself. And he said, and in the darkness, I found the light. That's why I think so many of you would benefit from this class. He's being transparent. He says, this solution sounds so simple to be fully accept your life as it is and innocuous that most of us will fabricate all kinds of religious trappings to avoid taking up what this inglorious, mundane, and ever-present cross of our being, that you're a human being and you're a spiritual being and you're having a human experience. And sometimes in this human experience, life can seem pretty dicey. But then he says this, we do not find our own center, rather our center finds us. When you step out of yourself, there is the path. You do not find your center, rather the center finds us, and our own mind will not be able to figure it out. Well, I wonder why is that, Tia? Because you're caught up in mental, you know what? Well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Whoa, no. He says, life is the great teacher. Lastly, we do not find our own center, rather it finds us, and our own mind will not be able to figure it out. Rather, we collapse back into a truth that is universal. Only when we are naked and free, which is probably not very often. Well, I don't think he's talking about taking your clothes off, do you? When you're naked and free, we do not think ourselves into a new way of living. Rather, we live ourselves into a new way of thinking. In other words, our journeys around and through our realities or circumferences, because he says we get trapped in the circumference of life, in that edge, in that threshold of what's wanting to happen now. And I spoke about that last week again from Richard Rohr. He talked about living in sacred space, which we all create for ourselves. And in that sacred space, we have a liminal way of attach, a liminal way of connecting. The liminosity is living at the threshold of the moment. So what is the threshold bringing? Sometimes it brings insecurity. Sometimes it brings a gravel road to a pot of honey. Live at that threshold of what's wanting to happen. For me, it was falling on my face and choosing not to go to a doctor because I really don't like them. I'm sorry. We live ourselves into a new way of thinking. And in other words, our journeys around and through our realities or the circumferences of life lead us to the core reality where we meet both our truest self and our truest God. Well, where do you meet it? You meet it right there at the core of your being. That's why the Sufis say, pound the head into the heart. Learn to live from the wisdom of the heart. The heart has compassion, my beloved spiritual son. He has this compassionate way of looking at life. He wants to rescue animals and help children. He wants to be in service to the suffering on the planet because he recognizes that they're all our children. So Richard Rohr goes on to say, we do not really know God except through our own broken and rejoicing humanity. We do not know God except through our own broken and rejoicing humanity. I'll leave that one alone. In Jesus, God tells us that God is not different from humanity. Thus, Jesus' most common and almost exclusive self-name was the human one. He would refer to himself as the Son of Humanity. It seems that we Christians have been worshiping Jesus' journey instead of doing his journey. He came to show the way. He came to show the way. It's by loving one another, by knowing it's all you. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. We are here to forgive 70 times 7. And we do that not for the other. We do that to free ourselves from that prison of self-righteous resentment. And so you see, it's a journey that we must all take ourselves. And part of that journey is a thing called a crucifixion and a resurrection. I'm talking in metaphor here. I saw my beloved neighbor, and she was cleaning up my face, and she's a member of the Methodist Church down there. And she has crosses everywhere around the house. They're everywhere. And I grew up with crosses. In fact, my mother was a nurse, and she worked at a Catholic hospital, St. Elizabeth's. And she would come back from the hospital, and she would have all these crucifixes, but they were the big ones, and she had the glow-in-the-dark ones. And I had a glow-in-the-dark Jesus over my bed, and there he was with the nails in his hands and in his feet and the crown of thorns. And I have to tell you, it scared the bejeebies out of me, because there he was all over the house. And when I came into this New Thought teaching, I realized that these are the yantras of the world's religions. You know, these are the symbols that point to a greater something. Like here's the symbol of our teaching, Centers for Spiritual Living. It's the descent of spirit through the soul into manifestation. Then you have, this is the Islamic one. the star and the moon, and how we are a reflection of Allah. All there is Allah. And you have the Hindu one, you have the Buddhist one. There's the Christian one in the very back. It's the Celtic cross, which is more palatable. You have the vertical reality of this, of now moment, cutting through time reality, and in that center moment is the sacred now. They have it illumined in gold, but the Celtics drew a circle around it, meaning that it's all part of the oneness. So they've taken it out of the object upon which Jesus died to a symbol of our connection to the one light, the one love. And you can look at the Star of David, one of my favorites, because my name is David, the Jewish one. It's the upper three chakras over the lower three chakras, and they meet in the heart chakra. Isn't that a beloved symbol? You can meditate on that and it'll take you into the heart of the one. Then you have the Sufi symbol, which is the heart that is winged, moving into the light. Now, play that, put that in your heart, Seamus, and take that into your meditations and see what your poetry will tell you. And then, of course, you have the Vesica Pisces, which Wanda Gale insisted upon, because out of Taoism, you have the male and the female, the yin-yang working together. And I shared with my neighbor, Diane, I said, you know, the soul is androgynous. She says, what do you mean by that? I said, the soul is both male and female. We have an inner masculine and an inner feminine, and that's what the yin-yang showed you. When I took a Qigong workshop, they talked about the yin-yang. The yang is this masculine energy, and we are a yang culture. We want there to conquer, to have goals to achieve. Whether you're a man or a woman, you're yang. Yin is surrendering, yielding, trusting. So could we put those two together and play with them? You know, and so when you see it in a different way, and I love that poster, when you look at the world in a different way, the world will change, because you're seeing it not as something that's dysfunctional and caught up in its own routinized way, but it's something that's emerging. So I chose to do this new class, which is an old class for me, because it's very relevant for now. And it's called The Joy of True Meditation. And the non-accident for this man is that 6 years ago, in March 12th, I had a heart attack, and it was the Widowmaker. And when I came out of recovery, the nurse in the recovery room said, you're not supposed to be here. And I said, what are you saying to me? And she said, you had the Widowmaker and only 2% survived. I said, I think that's too much information at this stage of my recovery. Anyway, so I survived it. And I planned this retreat to see Jeff Foster in Colorado a week later. And I asked the doctor, and he said, yeah, you can go if you make sure you're taking care of yourself. So I took my little boy 6 years ago out to Colorado. And this man kind of changed my life, because through his example of being a vulnerable soul who went through this catharsis, he found a true identity. He moved from duality into non-duality. And you know, a non-dual teacher, which is what he is, doesn't believe there's good and there's bad, there's right and there's wrong, there's black and there's white. No, it's all part of the oneness. So when the fear would come up, you meet the fear, you embrace the fear. When the doubts come up, you don't shame the doubts. You look into them with compassion, and they're pointing to something clear. And then you hear that song from the past, I can see clearly now. The pain of my ego is gone. I can see all the obstacles that were in my way were self-created. And then, you know, what's so funny, in this teaching science of mind, there's no teaching about fana, which is the first step in Sufism. Fana is the death of the little self. You don't identify with the local self, you identify with our true nature. So Jeff Foster has a lovely way of synthesizing this for me. And for those of you who are going to take or considering, this is one of the very best for any of us. He starts off at this very beginning. He said, I was beginning to discover my true nature when everything fell apart. And he was in a mental institution. I was beginning to discover who I really was. Before, I had been taught to distrust myself. Before, I was filled with self-hatred and fearful conditioning. Before I fell, isn't that funny he uses that word, I was discovering my true identity as presence and awareness itself. I was discovering that I am the light with a capital L that never goes out. This is his wake up. I discovered that I was a love that never dies. Isn't that a beautiful wake up moment? Fred not dead. The light that never goes out, the love that never dies. I was the great inextinguishable fire of creation within wanting to be revealed. That's what you're feeling, Shay. This call from within. At the core of my separation, shame, and abandonment was my death wound. But in that, a new hope was being born. Isn't that a sacred place where this new hope is coming alive in you once you meet this part of you that has to die? At the heart of duality, I was experiencing non-duality. Out of the two, I was finding the one. In the midst of the darkness, in the belly of the beast, I found a new life emerging. So he's talking about his own resurrection, Barbara. This is a spiritual resurrection. In the midst of the darkness, in the belly of the beast, a new life. He says a resurrection, a forgiveness, a second chance, a new beginning. We're all arising within me. All because he faced the darkness and he found the light. Some days, he said, I quaked and convulsed with fear. All the fear that I'd never really let myself feel. Don't you love this, Ashley? He went right into that fear. I let it move through me finally instead of pushing it away. Some days I felt ecstatic joy and terrible despair in the very same moment. I felt joy and despair in the very same moment. And then he says in all capital letters, I was a glorious mess. Anybody been a mess? I was a mess all day yesterday. And I cherish that. But maybe we have to go insane in order to heal, he says. I'd been suffering from my whole life. Maybe the straitjacket of adaptation was finally burning up in a fever of healing. He was raised in a British environment where they wanted, as they do, their oldest son to become a somebody. And so he went to college and got all these degrees, only to find that it took him into a place where he was suicidal. Because he hadn't honored who he was, he was trying to fill somebody else's expectation. I think that's what Seamus' workshop was about, and he's the living example of where it took him. I was learning to trust myself finally again. I was learning to stay close to my own experience without judging it, without trying to fix it, or without trying to even be free from it. I was learning what I call now true meditation. Meditation is when you sit with what is. It's not trying to escape into some la-la land. No. And if when you're sitting with this, and he's the one that gave me that acronym REST, you recognize what's arising right now. You allow it. You inquire into it. And in that, you do it in a nurturing way. And in that example, you discover what your life is showing you. So I was learning true meditation from the fiercest meditation teacher of all. And who do you think that fiercest meditation teacher of all is? Life. A little bit more. He said, I started to fall in love with life again. Here he was running away from life. I started to fall in life with again on this strange planet that we call Earth. All of life, he says. The joy, the sorrow, the boredom, the confusion, the disappointment, the doubt, the longing and the loneliness. All of it was sacred to me now. Isn't that sweet when you can open to that? You know, when I fell, my little boy came up. I was 10 years old again, and I didn't want to go to a doctor. I just wanted my twin sister to hold me in her arms. So I went over to my neighbor lady. She looked at me and said, oh, my God, you must have fallen on your face. And I said, yeah, would you give me a hug? Because my little boy just needed to be held. All was beloved to me and fascinating to me, like it had been when I was a little boy. I no longer wanted to be free from my feelings. I wanted to feel them all and to experience them all and to taste them all. I was no longer afraid of my thoughts. I wanted to think those entire crazy thoughts that I'm a universal being and that I create my own reality and that I can create entire galaxies with my imagination. I wanted to let myself have permission to be the wild, crazy, imaginative little soul that I was. That's why you have to be like a child to enter this place called heaven. I was in an artist's consciousness again, as I had been when I was a little boy. I was in love with all of creation, and I was seeing life through new eyes, through the innocence of a child's eyes, eyes full of innocence and wonder. I was a vast ocean of consciousness, learning to love all of the waves of thoughts, feelings, and sensations. I didn't cast anybody out anymore. And then you hear Rumi. This being human is like a guest house, and come knocking on the door are all your issues, your fears, your worries, your judgments. He says, invite them all in. They may be coming to clean out your house. And only by inquiring, what are you here to show me? We had a beautiful revealing service, and we're doing the Wednesday night satsangs, and they too are very fulfilling for my soul because it's a safe place where we can all meet in the Sangha, in that sacred place of love. And when that stuff comes up, a whole bunch of grief came up this morning, and I think that was so sacred. Because all it takes is one person to put that little trigger. It's okay to cry. I mean, I think Ashley started with a tear coming down her face, and then I started to cry in response, and then it went on and on and on. And remember, spare me of wisdom that cannot cry. So those are sacred tears of realization, sacred tears of embracing the moment. I love the tears when they come. So I wanted to be broken and whole at the same time, he says. I wanted the positive and the negative of existence to be friends. I wanted the bliss, but also I wanted the heartache. I wanted the up, but I also wanted the down of life. I wanted desire, and I also wanted the lack of desire. I wanted feelings, and I wanted to feel the absence of those feelings as well. He was embracing the paradox of every moment. I was hungry for all the polarities of being, the yin and the yang, the comedy and the tragedy, the agony and the ecstasy, the storm and the sunshine, the flaws and the imperfections, and the unbearable perfection of it all. I wanted all of myself back. I didn't want to be just that perfect little David Leonard that everybody thinks he is when the little flawed little boy who cries and laughs. And I wanted the dirt, the mess of life. I wanted wholeness. Yes, not happiness, but wholeness. A gift far greater than the mind's limited notion of what happiness should be. To be held in wholeness embraces the all of life. Yeah. And you hear Ernest Holmes, it's a perception of wholeness that's all healing. So what if when we become whole, we integrate all those parts of ourselves together? You know, that creative part of me isn't to be shamed anymore. I remember as a little boy, I was talking to Adam, my parents, when you would fall down, they would say things like, "You need to watch where you're walking." And, you know, I was a little kid. I was looking at the stars in the sky, and they say the definition of a Sagittarius is he's always tripping over the cracks in the sidewalks because he's looking at the stars in the sky. Fred has that same problem, you know. And I was, you know, walking. I was going to teach class on Wednesday morning. I was looking in the hair salon to see Mark, who I haven't seen here in a while because he works there, and he's always waving at me, and I'm looking for him. And the next thing I know, I'm falling down the stairs. I'm airborne. I'm aware that I'm airborne, and I land in a perfect plié. But I didn't realize that I sent the shock up my sciatic nerve, later took me to the emergency room because I passed out. I should have, would have, could have. So go to the end of this book so you can get how he evolves. He starts off by embracing the shadow, and then he comes to this last place at the very end where he called love's deepest commitment. The deepest commitment is to be the awake person that I started this month off talking about, wake up. And then last week I talked about the the chaos that leads to a higher order. So when those moments of chaos come and things fall apart, maybe a marriage ends or you lose a job or you have a stroke or a heart attack, those threshold moments, or you lose a beloved child, or Nancy and Lee lost their beloved Rex, the little dog that they had for so long, but you know he's still there. And those sacred moments are transformational. They're not where the universe is punishing us. Those are, how do you deal with those moments of chaos and a new order of being? So that's this third week on this month about creating a whole new world. I want to explore the idea of an awakened doing, to be the awakened one and to let it guide us in our actions. So then you're, in essence, doing your being. You're being the awakened soul and let the doing come out of that. So then how you do anything is how you do everything. You know, I love the fact that I go through the garden and it's all sacred to me. I go out and have this beautiful fish named Napoleon. He's this big old koi. He's the only one left of Patty, Maxine, and Laverne. When Patty and Maxine left, he became Napoleon Solo, because I didn't know what his name was anyway. And then Napoleon Solo was so lonely that Gigi and Raoul brought a little koi to go next to him, and I called her Josie for Josephine. She wasn't big enough to be Josephine. So it's Napoleon big, Josephine little, and they stay by each other's side all the time. And when I go out there, I went out there 5:30 this morning, and he comes up instantly, and he moves his mouth open, and she's right by his side, and her mouth's open. And then I thought, we had tilapia last night for dinner. How can I eat tilapia for dinner and then feed my fish in the morning? And I thought, could I eat Napoleon? No, I could not eat Napoleon. But then I have this process of detachment. And then Richard Rohr says, you know, we are spirit and we are soul. He says, the spirit is the part of us that can detach from the world. I'm a spiritual being. I'm having a human experience. That's going into the balcony. But the soul, he says, is very different. The soul wants to engage. The soul wants to be connected. We have soul connections here, and those are felt awarenesses. You know, when I asked several of you for a hug, that was my soul wanting to be held. It's not my spirit wanting to detach. So you begin to play. This is a playground. Can we play? So here he is at the very end of this book, having gone through the catharsis. He says, love's deepest commitment. Let's commit to being presence itself, he said. Let's commit to meeting the fire of every day. Let's commit to knowing each other and letting ourselves be known. And that's through deep listening. When Robert went out to that honey farm and sat on that porch for half an hour, that's where you deeply listen to another and they listen to one. That's a sense of learning to hear each other. Let's Make the deepest commitment to walking this path of healing wherever this path takes us. The telling the truth to ourselves and to each other as we walk this path of self-discovery. So he goes on to say, let's make our deepest commitment, one that cannot be broken or lost, to love itself. I love to use in my wedding ceremonies that divine love brings together and maintains together in harmony and balance those who belong together. So this is the love connection. The love brought you all here. And hopefully the love will sustain you. You know, let's make a commitment to love itself, to presence, to meeting in the here and now, which is the only time we ever have, to bringing and showing all of ourselves, not hiding behind a mask anymore. Trey wanted me to come here wearing a mask because he thought he looked so hideous after the fall. And I thought, and then someone said the mask would scare you all. But then Adam had a clever idea. I could wear a catcher's mask, and maybe that would be cute. Anyway, commit to meeting in the here and now and to bringing and showing all of ourselves, telling the truth today and knowing that our truth may change tomorrow. Let us make the deepest commitment to listening to each other and to bowing before each other's experience, even if our hearts are broken and tender, even if we trigger the deepest pain in each other. Don't you love the people that trigger you, that push your buttons? They're showing you the button. And the button, once you find that button, oh, it's sacred. So finding that deepest pain in each other, the most profound disappointment, the strongest urges and the longings, be present with those. So we're all, that's why the satsang is so powerful on Wednesday nights, because we're here to hear each other where we are. Let us commit to meeting our own pain, loving each other, and yes, to love, and he says this, do not project your love out onto form, because that's the trap, because then the form can leave and you think the love is left. He says, rather, love is a field. It's the field of awareness. And you've heard me quote Rumi many a time. He says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is a field. It's that field of love. And he said, and when the soul lies down in that field of love, words are not necessary. Even the idea, each other, does not exist. I will meet you there. So he's referencing it. He said, love is a field. It's not a person. It's not a form, even though it appears in all form. He says, let us commit to this field. Remember the field in every single moment of our precious days on this earth. Let's devote ourselves to this field of love, to this eternal now. It's that field of love, Adam, that's taking you into this calling of your soul to serve. That's the field. And when our eyes are open, when we are awake, we live very close to life, very close to death, very close to insecurity, very close to loss. But this is where we find such great aliveness, on the edge of life, where everything is always new, where we are constantly surprised by ourselves and each other. We are alive in the moment and we're tending to that love. So thank you, Jeff Foster. I look forward to falling into your heart and letting it lead the way. Shall we do a little closing meditation? And then we have a lovely song. Should we do that before or after? We'll do that after. Okay. Thank you, Jody. So let's breathe into that beautiful, sacred field that Jeff is speaking about, that field of love. Next week, the last week of this series, I'm going to explore the idea of the deepest acceptance, which is also a book written by Jeff Foster. And in that, he says, we do not accept or deny. He says, rather, we are the acceptance itself. And so when we can move into this acceptance of life, just as it is, with its accidents and with its intentions, acceptance accepts all things, bears all things, endures all things. Love accepts all things, bears all things, endures all things. And in all that acceptance, love, peace, we say yes, yes, yes. And that yes then is like an open arms. When the suffering comes to the threshold of your awareness, you put your arms around that suffering. When fear should arise from that little part of ourselves that forgets that everything is really all right, well, when little fearful Freddy comes up, you embrace fearful Freddy. When controlling Curtis comes up, the one who wants to make everything just the way it's supposed to be, I live with controlling Curtis. You hug controlling Curtis. and say, you're not in control, my darling. And that's okay. And then in not being able to control life the way you think it should go, you can accept life where life is. And maybe life is trying to give us a message along the way. And so then we smile. Because we know that the wisdom does contain the tears. And the philosophy must be able to laugh in order so we don't take ourselves too seriously. And truly, our greatness always surfaces when we can bow to a child and we can know that they are showing us how to be free, how to be authentic, and how to be alive in the love that we all share in that field of love. And so we come into this experience every day inviting the resurrection, inviting the rebirth of the soul. Jesus said, die daily to be born again in me. It's a metaphor to die to the local self, to be born into the universal love that we all share. It's the one life, the one love, revealing itself endlessly anew through each one of us. And when these non-accidents happen, they're little wake-up calls that say, in this, I too am there, in this moment of seeming vulnerability and doubt and maybe self-criticism, we can see an old pattern surfacing and we can laugh. I don't shame myself anymore for falling down. Rather, I pick myself up with love and I take the next step. And so we're in this dance together, the one life. My prayer partner in White Rock CSL, they have four simple premises in their center. The first one is that we're all spiritual beings and we're having a human experience. The second is we need do nothing to change ourselves to be acceptable in this world. The third is all there is love. The last one is, and we are all here walking each other home. And so as we play with a simple realization that this too is good, this too is God, and we open to see the blessing in every single moment, well, then it's all grace, the givingness of the universe to itself through each one of us. And sometimes at the thresholds of change, we need a little wake-up call along the way. So I can see clearly now, the pain is gone. I can see all the obstacles that were in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. And I know it's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day with you by my side, looking up into the light, stepping out of the darkness of yesterday, and finding that I am here. I am is still here, bowing to the sacred moment, opening to that field of love where all is well and all shall be well. With a deep integrating breath, let's take an exhale with a sigh, as we row, row, row our boats gently down the stream of life, having fun, knowing that there's four merrilies to every three rows, and we get to have joy leading the way, and so it is.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.